DJ, drop a beat.
Not another podcast.
Not another podcast.
Not another podcast.
Not another podcast.
What the hell is wrong with you people?
Those people are the freaks, man.
Price.
Oh my God, who the hell cares?
James.
I am sick and tired of everyone telling me I'm confused.
Big Jim.
I told you. What did I tell you? Didn't I tell you? Cause I told you.
Samantha.
I am gonna have regular sex with you whether you like it or not.
Not another podcast.
We got
great
balls.
Start to the show. Welcome to Not Another Podcast. I am James, and Jim is not here. Bryce is not here. Samantha's not here.
Jerks.
But Dan's here.
Yay!
And we got two special guests.
Ball sacks from Dan.
Also Dan.
And the man with the golden pipes over there.
Yeah, baby!
Ooh, Dr. Steve. Roxo.
Baby.
We've already degenerated. We're not even 5 seconds into this.
Nope.
This is fantastic.
How do you tell time?
These are the guys from fucking Herkimer.
Yay.
We got almost the entire band here, minus the drummer, as it should be.
We'll just program it in anyway.
We love you, Sean. Sean couldn't be.
Miss you, buddy.
But yeah, the band's here. We've been talking about doing this, and I said, fuck it, I'm pulling the trigger, and these guys had no choices. Dan is tied to his chair.
He is.
And he's like 10 seconds away from a ball gag.
Which we figured he would like too much, so we took it away from him.
And we
there
gave it to
a
Steve.
There is a bandana hanging out from the mic stand.
There is.
Steve
we could
is
leverage
playing.
That.
The gag order is in effect.
Steve is playing like the gimp from speak. Pulp Fiction over there.
Zed's dead, honey.
So we cool?
We cool.
We cool.
We've played Herkimer on the show before, long time ago. And since that's happened, I've found myself as the rhythm guitarist slash producer of the band. And I thought it'd be fun to bring the band on and talk about where they got the start, how they met, and how my fucked up ass fits into all this. So, where did the band start?
Well, I mean, it's not really fair to say where we officially started, because Steve and I started in Apothic Steel.
So it started in Apothic Steel.
But after that fell through, I'd met Sean at work, and he told me he played drums, and we wanted to get together and jam sometime. And it just so happens that his drum set was at Dan's house. And so we went over to Dan's house, because he was kind enough to loan us the space to jam out. And for the first couple of practices, there was a lot of beer, a lot of incoherent noise, a lot of
that never
feedback.
Really changed.
Not so
really.
Yeah, like practice now,
and not nearly enough equipment.
Yeah, no. A lot of feedback, you know, a lot of terrible things went down. But it was after a while we started actually trying to put together songs, and in fear of another person coming in to be the bass player, Dan was like, no, I got it.
Her name is Charity. She's made of evil.
Yes. And he saved us from the wrath therein. And at that point, it just was us four, and we were just dicking off every Friday.
I saved them from a young Earth creationist Baptist daughter.
Yay! Again, much appreciated.
That's what you want in a metal band for a bassist.
Right?
Maybe playing the tambourine.
Yes.
I'm sorry, wait. I feel like I've missed a story here.
I used to live with a young Earth creationist who was the daughter, who still is the daughter, of a Baptist minister that was the preacher of his own church, except he recently got excommunicated. He wasn't very good at God, apparently, at least not according to his parishioners.
Apparently not.
But yeah, she lived with us, and she was actually a pretty decent bass player, which was offset by her utter insanity.
Mm-hmm.
Which is typical of the female
right.
of the species.
Yeah.
And at the time, bassists were low on the ground.
Yeah.
And I didn't really play bass. I was more of a guitarist. And then I picked it up to save the rest of the band from the curse of crazy Christians.
I thought he was going to say, I picked it up to clean an area. I picked it up because it was in front of my beer.
Actually, I used to drive her mad, dude. We'd get like these theological debates and, you know, society out on the porch while smoking cigarettes and, you know, just having too much alcohol. And I would just relate everything she had to say back to the Industrial Revolution. Because, you know, why not?
Just fuck it.
If you're going to pick a revolution, right? That one.
Just yeah, go with that one.
It was just, it was fun because it really irked her.
Thank you, Carbon Emissions.
It's inevitably at any point when you deconstructed her arguments, there was going to be a point when she would just storm off in rage.
Yeah.
Yep. Frustration.
Rage quit. It was hilarious.
Because oftentimes her responses would be along the lines of, you'd ask her a logical question. Well, anything's possible with God. And we wouldn't let her fly with that. We'd be like, no, sorry, that's...
No, it's explain your argument, yeah.
That's a fucking cop-out.
Work out the science, bitch.
Yeah, so, yeah, come with an actual, rational,
okay,
thought-out
Okay, seriously,
answer.
You guys mm-hmm. have just booked yourself. The next time Bryce and Jim want to have a religious show, you guys are on it.
Oh, well, that's going to be like a five-hour debate, bro.
Did you know I almost joined the priesthood?
I did not.
No.
I was also an altar boy for many, many years.
From now on, your nickname is Father Dan.
Yay!
Yeah, I went to a Baptist
Seriously,
college,
Steve, I could get used to this.
Jesuit Catholic high school and a Roman Catholic grade school and junior high. I was highly religious until I reached the age of reason, which
as
for
most
me was
people
about
are.
Was came late
as,
at about like
as
15, because I was heavily indoctrinated. It took me a while to break out of that. But
well, on the flip side of things, Steve over here is an ordained minister of the dude.
Yes. I am a dudist priest.
He is a dudist
priest. And I do abide.
He has a certificate and everything.
Yeah, it even came with some really nice patches, too.
Nice.
And stickers. Which I
think
still
we
haven't
just named
applied
our
to anything.
Second album right there.
But,
right,
you know.
Dudist priest.
All of us on the cover wearing dude sweaters.
Because we abide.
I will abide.
Holding white Russians.
Right, right. That's an easy album cover right there.
With the rug that ties the whole album together.
Right.
Yes.
That's got to be the best. It is. Oh. That is
about,
the rug that ties the room together.
We should clean that though. Just saying.
What about the Creedence? We gotta have a Creedence cover or something on that album.
That's because
you have to have
with.
The Creedence.
Yeah.
No Eagles though.
No.
No Eagles.
Yeah, fuck you. No.
What's really funny is before
Why
recording
did you
this.
Bring them up, Jesus.
What's really
well,
funny?
Well, it's all about the cab ride, dude. You know.
There's a beverage here. What's really funny is Dan was worried before we started recording that he wouldn't have anything to say.
Right?
And I still do.
God bless the dude.
Nothing has changed my mind.
In the dude's name.
Okay, so how long has the band been together officially as Herkimer?
Officially, I think it's been almost 5
2
years.
2 weeks.
Yeah.
Four and a half, 5 years.
Yeah.
Yeah,
four
right
and half, 5 years.
Probably because it was around
2013.
October.
Mike, up to your mouth there, Dan.
Yeah.
No one can.
It was around October when 2013.
Yeah. Because I have photographs that I took of
no,
the guys on the board. It was earlier than that.
It had to have been July or August because once we finally started getting into a decent rhythm, I had to leave for South Bend.
The pictures that I have are from March 29th, 2013. So it was before that because you had officially become our bassist, and that was when I got the picture of you on the porch.
Oh, yeah, wow.
Without hair.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Bald as fuck.
He went close cut. We're glad that he grew it out. It's much more metal that way.
You might need to send me that picture so I can post it up on the podcast.
But yeah, and then I got pictures of Sean trying to look gangster on the porch as well.
Yeah, he still tries that now.
He does. And it's okay because we love him.
Yeah, but it's less effective because he's got the father pooch.
Hey, well, don't we all? But
yeah, we all got the pooch.
I'm just saying it's not as effective. Because he's,
next time we do pictures, because I'm assuming we're going to have to do pictures again soon for the website and stuff.
Yes.
We all suck it in.
But then on top of that, I'd like to see a side-by-side where we're all facing in the same direction, just letting our guts hang out like, yeah, you know you want this.
Well, hey,
just have the belly on belly on belly. Bup, 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 bup.
If we wanted to go really cliche with the pictures, we could actually use it for an album cover. and just call it sucking it in the cemetery?
Now, we are going to play at the end of this podcast. Stay tuned, because we are going to play the first official song since I've been on, Lucky Sevens. Great fucking song. And I'm not just saying that because I produced it.
No.
It's really top-notch. And I know the songs we got coming are going to bury that one, too, if we ever can get off our asses. The beauty about Herkimer is it's a band on a budget.
And we're a non-profit organization, as in we make no profits off of this organization.
And that budget includes not only money, but time.
$0 and zero time.
Yeah.
If we get all five people in the same place on the same day, a minor miracle
has
occurred.
It is a beautiful thing.
It is.
And if we could stop talking to each other and actually play...
Well, it sucks that we kind of like each other, you know.
No, but one of the beauties, when I first came on board to come check you guys out, it was after Sean had played Candyland Now. Great fucking song. And my first impression was, this is a great song, but it is produced so bad, you can't hear shit on it. And that was my critique.
Yeah.
And Sean took it and ran with it. And I said, look, I work in radio. I produce shit for a living.
Quit bragging.
I would be happy to produce your shit for free because I want to hear you guys sound good. Sean took it to you guys and apparently ran with it, because when I showed up, it was like I could have walked with doves behind me from a John Woo film. That was the look I was getting from all you guys.
More like pigeons.
Well, it's Portland, so yeah.
Let's just say Danny and Sean talked your ass up a bit, so...
Well,
you had some expectations to meet.
I think I've met those. So,
if only just.
Well,
we expect more, James. You got to step it up, bro.
You're only
going
to get just.
It's a good start.
I knew I screwed up.
Better up that game, buddy.
There's just never enough.
No.
You know, it's just the way.
Well, the thing is if I ever reach the point where it's enough, it's time for me to quit.
Right?
That's where my headspace is at, and I think that's where we are collectively as musicians. I've talked to all of you individually, and I think we're all very much of the same mindset that we want to do much more than we are now. And what I was getting to, though, is as the two children are flipping each other the verse, what really impressed me coming into this was how much you were getting from so little. You guys have put together a quality studio with nothing here.
Yeah.
I want to say the whole rig cost us what, a grand total of like $100?
The recording rig?
Yeah.
$200 if you include the Delta 1010.
Yeah.
The audio interface.
So $200 over the last 5 years we managed to scrap together.
A lot of pirated shit, a lot of salvage shit.
We opted for the drum kit, Steve did.
Steve did, yeah.
Yeah, that was like $350, I think.
I think it was only $300. I think
it was
on sale that day.
It was,
and they hooked
us
up with a deal. And since we still had most of our brass, mind you, most of it is cracked or cracking or broken altogether, that's a work in progress on a constant note. The sound tiles cost us, what, $15? And we were supposed to have a hell of a lot more. So Amazon fucked us there. Thank you, Amazon.
Thanks, Amazon.
GoPro.
Appreciate it, Amazon.
Not understanding
Jeff Bezos
what
and your $26
sound tiles look like.
Right. Steve's guitar, he had prior... The amp that he initially had brought, he had prior. My guitar, I just bought a couple of years ago because it was my dream rig. Mm. And that cost me $200. My basses that I have a 4-string Ibanez that I got as a Christmas present. And my 5-string I bought with my very first paycheck from my paying job back in high school for $150. And so, yeah, balling on a budget, something fierce.
So here's the thing. For anyone who's trying to put together a band or something, you don't need top-notch equipment.
No.
What you need is vision.
And a good
pirate.
You
guys have got it in spades. A really good IT guy.
Yeah. It's very, very helpful.
Because I came in, I was, again...
Learn software plugins. They will save your ass.
Yeah. Since I've been in the band, I have probably one of the best fucking tones that we just tightened up again today. And I'm not running through an amp.
Nope.
I'm running straight into a whole...
A mixer board, into a computer, into stereo
speakers. Cores and shit. And the tone that Dan has given me, people pay... fucking thousands of dollars to achieve.
Mm-hmm.
And I got it for nothing.
Yep.
Well, I had to buy some root beer, but.
And an enthusiastic, you know.
Yeah, but, well,
at some point we should probably license the software we're using.
Don't say that alone. No.
We should.
I might have to beat that.
And update the software. Yeah, ignore that.
Edit. Beep.
Welcome to Not Another Podcast. But, yeah, I was coming in, I was really impressed, number one, with the songs I'd heard. Because up till that point, I'd only heard Candyland Now.
Right.
You guys had 8 or 10 songs that you played me that night before Dan started jerking himself.
Which Dan?
Guitar Dan.
Por qué no los dos?
It wasn't Father Dan. It was Luddite Boy.
Well, you know.
But you guys had a pretty solid repertoire. But the thing that blew me away most, and I'm going to fucking jerk him off right now, is fucking Steve's vocals.
Woohoo!
Yeah, that's
dude
right.
Dude sounds like,
that's
and you right. will hear on Lucky Sevens, dude sounds like he gargled Lemmy Kilmister's
Jesus.
And then on other songs, he was jerked tasty. Off Glenn Danzig.
Yep.
And yeah, I did that too.
Yeah, yeah. That was on the bucket list.
If
you know?
Lemmy and nope. Danzig had a baby, it would be Steve.
It would.
He jerked him off with his mouth.
I just looked at the guys and I said, "Are you ready to play the game?" You know,
yeah, because it's all about the game.
Through cum osmosis.
And Lemmy went, "Yeah, right."
Buggy day, mate.
Blurp.
No, and you will hear it on this podcast. You will hear it in future songs because this podcast is an official Herkimer podcast.
Yeah, it is.
It's the only one because no one else will have us.
And nobody listens, so it's free.
We're just jerking ourselves off here.
Blurp.
No, but you blew me away, and we talked well, that brother. Night about improving your sound. Because the one thing I noticed during that practice is you couldn't hear yourself.
No, that's been a running thing for a while.
But that has since improved since I've come on board. We found workarounds, and especially when we put Lucky Sevens, the thing that I knew was a good thing was, oh, I can hear myself.
Right.
Because you guys had recorded before.
Oh, yeah.
How many times had
oh,
you
Jesus.
Attempted?
Steve, we have, like, what, running, like,
damn.
30 copies of Demons and Dirt and Sand between R2, the first rig, the second rig, the third rig, and the new rig. And then this is the re-upped one that we haven't recorded on. So I would say probably in that machine there's ballpark 30 more that I don't have on my iTunes.
Yeah.
All sounding better in succession because as we moved on, we, well, like, for my parts... I changed a decent amount of it because at the beginning, like, all the shit that I come up with is very, very repetitious. Because that's how I do. That's how I start myself off is mm-hmm. I just get repetitious. Then everyone builds on that, making it sound so much cooler. And then it's like, oh, yeah, I've got to make it sound better. Yeah, it sounds stupid. But, yeah, I mean, Demons was the first of the Herkimer songs just because... I had given lyrics for the song to Steve a long time ago. I had no idea, no riff, no placement, no nothing. I just knew I wanted to write a song about the Dust Bowl. I gave them to Steve. He tweaked the ever-living shit out of them. They sounded much cooler, but we still didn't have a tune for it. So once we got together with Sean, and I started just, you know, wanking in the living room on the guitar, because that's what I do, came up with a really cool riff. Everyone was really excited. Mind you, we were probably super drunk, so it probably sounded way cooler. And I went home, and I had Steve take video of it, and he posted it up on YouTube. The video is almost completely black because we had no lights in the living room, a going theme in the band room. And it was a matter of I sat at home, and I worked it out. I played it a bit more, and I made it more repetitious. So when we came back, I brought it back up. Steve was like, hey, that could work for this. Pulled those lyrics down. Sean and I kind of chimed. Dan stepped in, gave us some really cool bass riffs. To definitely give it a lot more gumption, and then the song started to be born. And off of that interaction between us is how that first song got created. And since then, again, if you listen to the old R2 recordings, it's horrendous. It's just awful.
Well, it also got used in a school project, too,
yeah.
when I was at Portland Community College.
Yeah, that's right.
I had that working class literature course I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And we used that song, and of course wrote a paper that went with it. But posted it on YouTube and played it for the class and went over well, dude. And that was, I think we used R2 for that recording.
Actually, I think that might have been the very first incarnation of the rig.
Yeah. Maybe,
because you were maybe much more audible over that than we ever were over R2.
Yeah, that was the Delta 60, or no, the Audiophile 2496, which gave us two channels.
Woo-hoo!
Yes, that's
two
right.
Lines of input. Yep,
yep. That's right. Because I know we were putting R2 in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And then, like, you know, which is like, you know, for all intents and purposes was like a world's away, you know.
Yeah.
Just so that way we didn't overpower the hell out of him. We actually got some decent recordings with
There's
that
a couple that
rig.
Are good. I mean, Good Day to Die's first incarnation and Candyland Now first incarnation, if I'm not mistaken, No, those were the rig. But we had one of our songs, I think it was Lucky Sevens, that actually came through really well over R2.
Right. Yeah.
But for those who don't know, R2 is a little room recorder that has mics on both sides of the top. You push the button to record and you set it somewhere. It is a room recorder. That is it.
And it looked vaguely like R2-D2.
It's short. It's probably about
like
5 inches tall.
Maybe if you
crossed
your eyes, squinted, and were hammered drunk.
Hence why it got the
like
name.
R2. I love you, R2.
Well,
hey,
you know,
digital and had a screen, man.
He served his purpose for his time.
He did, man.
And he gave us motivation to better ourselves in quality and sound and everything. So, I mean, and then Dan, being the magical wizard he is with computers, was like, I can do better.
Well, look what R2 did for Luke, man. He did the same thing.
Right?
You know?
Inspired.
I mean, he inspired him to go further. He got he got Aunt Beru and Owen Lars charred to a crisp. For showing up on his planet, you know. Come on.
Fuck you, R2.
However, Luke never tossed R2 into the dustbin at the first opportunity to upgrade it.
Well,
hey, I still got R2.
He's just
sleeping like he was in Force Awakens, you know.
He's waiting for our camping trip, so yes. When we all have our acoustics around the campfire, we'll get some audio of the drunken debauchery that will take place. In that case scenario. Other than that.
Just bring your laptop, the audio device.
Like hell, I ain't getting dirt in that shit. R2 can handle it. I ain't lumping
R2's
fucking cords around.
R2's been in a swamp, for God's sake.
If I'm going camping, I plan to get my pole a little bit, because I don't do it very often, and quite frankly, I'm going to need it.
Speaking of which, can we get a camping trip put together this time that everybody won't pull out on?
Right.
Well, yes.
Save the dirty laundry for when we're not recording.
I mean, we got
to
get.
There were good reasons it didn't quite come together. It partially came together. We had a great time, but we were missing, James and John.
I had just joined the band by then, so.
But what I would like to see is I would like to see just us, the band, go out and just have some fun.
Five
some
men in
meat.
The woods, naked with guitars.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Wait, yes, what? Where nobody pulls out.
Yeah.
There's the name of our third album.
Where nobody like pulls out.
Nobody pulls out.
Well,
no
one
you know,
can hear
hey,
you scream.
You know, camping trip like this takes commitment. And in that commitment, you don't pull out when you have that level of commitment.
You jam you it know? In. You
yeah.
make sure you're there, and you make sure you're always coming.
And you leave feel like I'm the prisoner. Entire weekend.
Uh-huh. Bub-bub-bub-bub.
Gut to gut to gut.
That's hot.
You know, 5 people should be sufficient to kind of hook it to
this
creative.
Is not
we
too
might
far
be able to make a perfect
fucking,
circle jerk.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Yeah.
There is a...
the pentagram jerk. That'd be great.
Five-point
jerk.
There's a group conversation on our Facebook that we're all part of. And recently this week we were talking, I think Steve started it, saying something about get your ass together, brother, something like that. And I wrote back, ass brothers. That sounds hot.
Yes, sweaty ass brothers.
I think that's the mentality of any band. There's always the gay humor, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I sent the GIF to you guys from Orgasmo. I don't sound like a queer or nothing, but you got a sexy ass, dude.
Did you just touch my
no
ass?
Part
did you grab my
did
ass?
You just touch my ass?
It's okay if you did.
Touching it now.
I just want to know if it was you. Did you grab my ass?
That's physically impossible, sir. I'm way over here.
Nah, you
that's
tricky
Steve in
bastard.
One hand and Danny in the other.
That's a handful of man.
So let's talk the writing
process.
Dealing
with school children.
Yes, you are.
Welcome to the world of podcasting.
Very delinquent school
children.
Good
morning, sweetheart.
Can we talk creative process? Because you were mentioning earlier that it's repetition. I think anyone who's ever written a song will say it's always repetition.
Oh, yeah.
But lyrically, what is your process, Steve?
Steve is just a badass.
Damn. I guess really,
he wasn't expecting the hard questions.
Nope. I guess really I start with concrete images, you know, like how I would write a poem, for example. And not like, you know, poems about like, you know, liquefaction of the clues.
And that should be mentioned. Steve is an accomplished writer.
I try.
He is.
I've had a few poems published.
Writer.
And working on a novel and whatnot. But
and it is badass. I'm not trying to jerk him off, but quite frankly,
really?
Of the writers I know, he knows how to have
off.
A good cadence.
Danny is not trying to jerk Steve
not
off.
Not trying.
To blow
I
him.
Am. I am totally trying to, but it's Steve. Since I know him, it's a lot easier to understand where he's coming from. So when I read his writing, it makes a lot more sense to me. A lot easier than some writers. But in his case scenario, he does have a wonderful way with words that makes it very entertaining and very fast pace to enjoy what he's written down. And
thank
that's kind of hard to find in a lot of writers, because I read a lot and there are very many writers that are just like, God, you're fucking dragging ass. Move on. I don't care. Steve is much better.
If things go according to tentative plans, you will hear more of Steve's work on this podcast. We've got a couple things in the work that we were talking about a few weeks ago, and I touched base with Steve today, and it's in the works.
Oh, yeah.
So hopefully things go well. We're going to have some really interesting shit that people might actually start listening to this podcast for. Not this.
Not likely.
Not this. Not
wait
any
a minute.
Of this.
They did something before that? Uh-uh.
Oh, no wonder they stopped. It's terrible.
Oh, God, it's just awful.
Yeah, I mean, more of that. Give me
yeah,
more
I mean,
of
like
that.
Writing lyrics, it's you can be more abstract.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because poems, you got to have concrete images, you know. You have to have an image for the reader to connect with. You have to have that emotion as well connected with an image.
Mm-hmm.
And lyrics give you more room to play with abstraction, emotions, situations or scenarios, and you can write it in such a way where you don't have to really commit those images to every line. You don't have to worry so much about you know where you're leaving a line off at, if that last word is going to have a real impact on the reader. Like, why did you do your enjambment on this line as opposed to this line? Why'd you leave off on this word? Lyrics, you just have a lot more freedom just to freestyle.
I don't necessarily need to make sense.
And on top of that,
exactly.
though, I will say, although
it's emotion,
that is...
Man. It's emotion, it's feelings, it's...
And that's something that I like about your lyric writing style, is because you usually do have images. I mean, you look at a song like Candyland Now, which started as a goof.
All images.
It was silly, stupid shit. Again, simple, stupid riff. Sean picked up on it immediately. Dan picked up on it immediately. And Steve was just in a mood to be silly. And it fucking worked, because it was brilliantly silly. And it painted such an interesting image.
Well, that's the thing. It's all visual imagery. The entire thing is descriptive.
Mm-hmm.
It's... The entire thing, beginning to end, is describing the state of the individuals taking part.
World War One on Candyland, the board game.
You know, your Neapolitan hills. You're literally, you know, painting a verbal picture.
Hi.
Gummy bears explode on gusher mines.
Right.
You know,
it's straight description. You know, from beginning to end. Whereas something like Demons is.
It has imagery, but it's a lot more poetic in its imagery.
Right. It's exploring the emotions of living through that and what it feels like. It's more emotionally descriptive than visually descriptive. And I think that's where some
you get some of the changes in the lyrics song to song is, you know, Steve doesn't write everything. Danny's written a few things here and there as well.
Yep.
All
right.
And you can see some stylistic changes. I'd say initially when we first got together, there wasn't necessarily a very formalized process. No. You had already had a lot of material that you kind of jotted down in notebooks.
Yep.
And I remember when we first were putting music together, we'd, you know, Sean would start hitting a beat.
Mm-hmm.
Danny had put a guitar hook to it. I'd try to find a bass hook to it. And as we were doing that, Steve would be sitting in the corner reading through his notes, editing them, modifying them, adding new lyrics, sometimes scrapping it all together, writing new stuff from scratch. As the moment came upon, the process I saw, personally anyway,
mm-hmm.
was you listening to the vibe of the music and deriving the lyrics out of that, instead
right.
of dictating the lyrics and us trying to create a sound out of it. So, to your question, James, initially of, you know, what was the process, I would say that was at least part of it, was the lyrics were derived from the sound of what was being played, as
mm-hmm.
opposed to just writing lyrics and then fitting a tune into it. And I think you having a large notebook of kind of pre-written stuff that you could kind of listen to what we were playing and go, oh, that kind of fits. That fits here. The phrasing works for the timing, for the structure.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot of our best songs, in my mind, came together that way.
Agreed.
Good Day to Die.
Oh, God.
My personal favorite.
Mm-hmm.
We just started off with this concept of a dude snapping.
Yeah.
Right?
And it worked out beautifully in the respect there's still imagery in it, but a lot of it is emotionally driven by the lyric substance.
And I would say, too, that any good song is actually more driven by the emotion behind it.
Oh, yeah.
And another thing, too, is music is so subjective that someone may hear a song and feel very angry.
Mm-hmm.
It just touches that dark place in them. But someone else might hear the same song with the same lyrics and go, oh, this makes me happy.
Right.
You know, like Cannibal Corpse, fuck you with a knife.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's cockles, you know, warms the cockles of your heart.
Staring through the eyes of the dead.
You know, and you
it's... I come blood.
Yeah.
It's also a nice thing, too, that when Steve and I were in Apothic Steel, you know, we did a lot of cover songs. That was the majority of Apothic Steel, was just we did cover tunes because our drummer knew how to rock these types of songs, and so that's what we did. We only came up with, what, four originals from Apothic Steel. Whiskey Sippin', Fight to the Death, Clegg-A-Rachi, and Vagabond Blues.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, I've reworked, and I'm going to run that by you. But
please do, yeah.
It was kind of nice for me because, you know, since I'm self-taught, I didn't have a whole lot of skill to back me up. I was a rhythm player through and through. I could make up a simple rhythm, no problem. And the beauty part about it was I could come up with a simple, basic rhythm, and Steve understood my measures. He understood where I break, where I change up, where the choruses come in, where the breakdown is, where the bridge is, things like that. So for him and I understood what he needed, and he understood what I needed from him as far as how to put down lyrics to what I'm coming up with. And so that was really nice for him and I to kind of get our start, was because we chimed.
Yeah, totally.
And it just made sense. And then coming from Apothic Steel, after our drummer had passed away, you know, I had to learn Sean's style of, you know, rhythm, which Sean and I, we understand each other fairly well, too, because he's a very big fan of bands like System of a Down.
Yeah.
And things of that sort. So his repetition is fairly easy for me to catch up with. And he's incredibly talented in the respects that he knows how to rumble really well. So him and I, we chimed. Steve and I, we already had our way of doing things. And then when Dan came in, Dan has a much more technical style to him where he doesn't like to just follow the rhythm. And it works out really well because then the bass stands out. It's much more, like you said, he's more of a guitar player and probably would have done very well as the guitarist because of the way that he addresses bass, in my opinion,
it's not a classical sense of rhythm follow. He follows the drums, but in the respects that the drums are all over the place and the bass is all over the place, but they sound fucking great.
Yeah.
And then when my rhythms are simplistic and those two are going over the top, it sounds really fucking cool.
And I'd say that partially came from the fact that before we all got together as Herkimer, Sean had been jamming with my roommate, Bobby, for like a couple of years before that. And that's why his drum kit was over in our living room. And
worked out.
So when him and Bobby and his band, the Carving Tree. Some horse shit. I mean, fucking hipster, pretentious bullshit name. Real band name shouldn't mean anything. but yeah, since when they weren't jamming, Sean had still come over all the time. And he and I would just, I'd pick up a guitar, he'd pick up the drums, and we'd just start playing together. We wouldn't set out with anything set, usually. And we would just jam. And so by the time we all got together as Herkimer, Sean and I already kind of had a rhythm. And so I just took that from playing guitar, shifted it down a couple octaves, you know, and, you know, slapped it on a bass, same thing, different tone.
And I think that's why it works out so well, because you and Sean did already understand one another, and it's usually well known that bass and drums have to kind of go hand in hand, which it worked out that you transferred over to bass because you already were hand in hand with Sean. I was already hand in hand with Steve.
Yep.
And we just kind of met in the middle at that rate, and that's how we started cranking out fucking tunes. I mean, Lucky Sevens was an Apothic Steel song originally, but if you listen to the original versus what it is now, it has a completely different shape to it, a completely different feel to it. I mean, again, I started out with just Steve's vocals and a very simplistic drum riff in the background, and now we are where we are, where we have more complex sections. We actually have bridges. We actually have a solo-esque, you know, fill. We have intros, outros.
That not only has a solo fill, now it actually has a full solo at the tail end of the song.
Yes. Right.
Which sounds very Offspring-ish.
Oh, yeah. Which also was...
came out of fucking nowhere.
And we came up with the day we recorded that track.
Yeah,
right?
In about 30 minutes, it went from him fucking around while we were playing the track back, and James and I kind of going, that sounds kind of cool. Keep going.
Yeah, we
on
didn't
that.
Do. You didn't take a lot of guidance in it. No, it was just.
I just kind
of
pulled it
I
out.
I think
my
we
ass.
Adjusted we just like, placement. Playing. Like, we got him a little bit higher up on the neck.
No, it was more so to the point where I had played it over the playback, and I wasn't recording at the time. And you guys were like, ooh, that sounds really fucking cool. Do it again!
Yeah.
And so I did it again, but that time it was different because I didn't really remember what the fuck I played because, again, I was just pulling it out of my ass. So the second time around wasn't quite the same as the first, so we redid it again, and I had more structure to it. I understood what I wanted to do, and then we redid it again, and then it was...
Well, I seem to recall we sat around for a little bit while you worked it out for, like, 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we recorded it two or three times and weren't getting it, and you just said, okay, fuck it, hang on. Like, 15 minutes, and you kind of just whittled it out, and then what ended up on the song, which you will hear, was fucking amazing.
Thank you.
Yeah, it worked out really well, and I think beginning to end, it was about 45 minutes to get it in the track.
Yeah.
And all we had to do was Steve and I just butted the fuck out, went out front, smoked a few cigarettes, came back in, and we're like, oh, it's ready, good to go.
Yeah, awesome. Me and Danny just kind of sat in here and BS'd while he worked it out, and everyone came back, hit record, and it was done.
And that's kind of how I do things, though. I mean, it's like, a lot of the times, that's what bothers me the most about coming up with my stuff is it's one of the reasons I wanted a rig at home that I could record stuff, because a lot of the times I'll have a thought in my head and it's like, fuck, I really want to play. And I'll go home and I'll plug in my amp, I'll sit down with my guitar and I'll start playing something. Like, ooh, that sounds fucking cool. I like that. And what I used to do was I used to take video of myself doing it and I'd send it to the guys. It's like, hey, what do you guys think?
Stop sending us naked videos. That's what we
think. No. That is how my creative process works, and you will accept it.
But you have to focus on your junk, though.
Yes. Yes, I do. The swinger must be there. It's my timekeeper.
He plays incredibly well with his cock getting away all the time.
He plays with his cock.
I do. I straight up murder face it. It's okay.
Well, isn't that what repetition is all about? Boom, 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 boom. You know?
Right?
I mean...
It's just masturbation at that point.
Come full circle.
But, you know, and it's also fun for me because when we pull up any kind of recording from things we do, even if they're shit, and we have a lot of recordings that are shit, which I don't think I'm alone in admitting. But it's nice when I'm at work, and since I have 8 hours to myself to just do my job, and it's so easy at this point where I don't have to think about what I'm doing, I can listen to our tracks, and it's like, ooh, I'd like to change that. Ooh, I'd like to modify that. Ooh, I have a great idea for that. And then when I go home, I try to put it in practice. But up until I had my own rig, it was just in practice. And then I would come to practice, and then we would dick off for the entire time, and then I would lose it, which sucks. But it's always there. If it's a strong enough idea, like the solo for Good Day to Die, the original solo was basically just a modified lyrical run. It was super easy, super straightforward, not very complex, but it filled the void, you know, it filled that space. And so I went home and I sat down. I initially wanted to transfer it over to a 7-string to make it a bit deeper, to make it a bit heavier. So the solo I came up with, I basically ran up the octave past the 12th and did almost the exact same thing I had done before. And on first run through, it sounded much better, but it wasn't a solo. And so the more I played, you know, and the more I tried to roll with Rocksmith, it gave me much better ideas on how or what I could do. It allowed me to expand my abilities to make it what it is now, which is a lot more complicated, a lot faster, however, still fairly simplistic in its nature. But it fills that space much better. And it's all because I just kept listening to it over and over and over again. I'm a repetitious guy. If I get something that I like, I'll just keep doing it until it's perfect. And for these guys, I know it's a bit of a bother sometimes because it's like, we have a great song, and it's like, I want to change the solo. Or, I have a great idea. It's like, no, shut up.
Well, I think if you ask any band that's been running for years and years, even Metallica changes shit when you see them live.
Not unless it's okayed by James. If it's not James' idea, it's shit.
The best part is I can cut that out and play it and take it out of context.
Right? Right?
Shit!
If it's not okay by James, it's shit. Remember when you said that, Dan?
Well, that's one thing that I really enjoy about, you know, playing with these guys is, you know, we come up with a rough draft of a song. Mm-hmm. And, you know, from, as a writer, writing standpoint, all rough drafts are fucking garbage. Yeah. I don't care how good they fucking come out, you know, whatever. All rough drafts are fucking garbage. But the thing I like about playing with these guys is that we're all willing to, you know, offer constructive critique to one another to help build that, you know, and revise it into a bigger, better monster. Mm-hmm. And we've all been able to, you know, offer critique to one another and talk, you know, talk about changing different aspects of the songs, whether it be bass or guitar, vocals or drums. And we've actually been able to do that without getting into fucking, you know, band fights, you know, like, God damn it, this is good enough, fucking blah, blah, blah. You know, we're always willing to hear each other out and go, hey, you know, this, what about trying this? What about doing that?
And that's something I noticed when I first came in to hear you guys play and offer critiques. You guys were very open about hearing what I had to say and not telling me to fuck off right there.
Fuck off, James.
And I always...
Fuck off, buddy.
Since then, it's changed. but it's always nice, I think, when you're working with creative people, when people are open to other ideas. And you guys were very open. And I prefaced everything. It's like, look, this is my opinion. It's not my band. It's not my song, but have you considered doing this? What would you think of this? And I think even some of those things that I suggested way back then, you guys kind of implemented. Mm-hmm. Maybe not without saying, hey, you know what James said, let's try that. I think it just kind of stuck, and maybe during times that you've played, it might have just been in the back of your minds and you went, maybe we'll try it this way or let's do that. And since that time, it was almost 6 months from the first time I came to hear you play until I was able to come back and kind of leap on the Herkimer bandwagon. See what I did?
But
in the air.
Room chat.
Yay, puns.
We've been reduced to puns. Thank you. But
no, since I've been a part of this, it is an open forum, and suggestions that have been made have been taken into consideration. And one of the great things is like, we've done it this way for so long, this is how we've done it, but let's go ahead and try it this way, see if we like it better. If we do, great, we keep it, we move forward. If not, we go back the other way.
It's shit. Yeah.
No, remember, as long as James approves it.
Well, and that's the beauty part about it, too. It's one of the things I love about playing with these guys. There is no real ego. I mean, I know damn good and well there are a billion guitar players out there that are 100 times faster, better, more technical, have more skill, more
years
in.
Yeah, there's one sitting right here.
I will not argue that because, quite frankly...
That is inaccurate.
It's one of those things, though, where it's like I'm very humbled by the people I play with because... Like, when it comes to lyric writing, Steve is top dollar, in my opinion, because I couldn't do that. I've tried to write songs, and they're most of the time fairly shit, which is why I give my lyrics to Steve, and he makes them better.
Speaking of which,
bass,
send you some
it's
lyrics.
One of those things where I was a bass player for many, many years. That was my thing. But watching Dan play the way that he does is a completely different style than the way I do it. And, I mean, I learned off of playing Mudvayne, and that was where I was at. The only difference between Dan and I's ability to play is I got...
He can slap, I can't.
Yeah. But that's it. And honestly, after that, that's really all there is. When it comes to guitar...
It is a big difference.
But still, it's a matter
of...
Seems
kind of relevant to a bassist, but...
And Dan, I want to...
I'm okay living without that capability.
I do want to give you props. We talked about it a little bit earlier about how you play... And you do something that not a lot of bass players do, and it is play the bass like a guitar. You make it its own instrument. It does stand out. It's it's amazing the stuff you do.
Yeah.
And one of the funniest things about Dan is when he plays something good, he's immediately the first to say that it's shit.
Right?
That's kind of how it is.
Yeah. You know, and it's like, but he doesn't fight you when he says, no, Dan, that's fucking great. He doesn't
dude,
fight
you.
Like,
no, it fucking sucked.
He just accepted it.
Inside, I know,
you know
it's hot garbage.
Inside, I'm crying. Some of the stuff that I've heard since I've been on board, and some of the stuff moving forward as we've been recording this, is amazing fucking work. And
agreed.
I think in past recordings, it's been buried. And I think what's troubling you, and the stuff that I've produced since I've been on board, is bringing that bass up so you can actually hear it.
Aye.
And I sometimes get the feeling that you prefer if it was still buried.
No, I don't mind it coming up at all. For me, as far as how it fits in the mix, it's all a matter of tone. Mm-hmm. I don't want the bass canceling out either the guitar or the drums. And with my play style, that is something that's very easy to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because when Sean's hitting... hard bass notes, I'm frequently hitting hard bass notes to play off that.
Mm-hmm.
And if it stands out too much in the mix, his shit gets drowned out. And I think sometimes we forget that we've got like a junior John Bonham for a drummer. The guy does phenomenal jazz style drum work in a metal way. Mm-hmm. And
he has a system of down flare.
The one thing I want the most is to bring that out in the mix, because it's with most drummers, I think you could keep them in the background and that would be fine
for the most part.
With
yeah.
Sean's play style, he's filling so many pockets in the sound.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That if that gets faded into the background, the sound kind of gets gimped. the overall tone
and we're back to Pulp Fiction.
Sound. Bring out the gimp. Well, no, let's put the gimp away.
And I think that that kind of leads into what I do. And Danny, I know you and I have had conversations about this. It's finding the right mix where everyone shines.
Also,
no one is overshadowing anyone else. And except for me. Don't hear me at all. It really is.
And the thing I will say that I've always felt about our bass tone, because, again, I do want to always hear the bass lines, because, again, they are so much different. If you mute just the bass line on any of our songs, it sounds almost kind of like a different song. But when played in the mix, it makes sense.
Yeah.
The only thing I've ever critiqued in the respects of the tone is I've always wanted to try to bring that clean bass head where you get that crisp pop on the low ends. And that's just a sound quality. It's not a play style. It's not an ability or anything like that.
We're finally starting to get that.
Right. And that's what I'm looking forward to, is just to bring that out. Because, again, Mudvayne. That's been always my go-to for bass, because their bass player, same concept, very seldomly ever followed along, and when he did, it was just for a power punch, but after that, he was way off the fucking rails.
Yeah.
Right.
And I loved that, but the tone of the bass stood out because it was that clean, crisp fucking bass tone. And now I know he had about $2,000 worth of fucking equipment in his amp alone, but fuck him.
And we don't have that.
We don't.
Tone,
we don't.
You're talking about 10 grand. For what he's doing.
I don't know. I actually shopped it around once back when I was just playing bass, because honestly, I wanted that tone. And it would have cost me about 2 grand. It would have cost me about $1,000 for the Warwick bass, which had EMG pickups, had the super souped up nastiness. And the amp head that he was using was, at the time, a Nemesis bass head. And oh my god, that fucking thing was beautiful. And it was just one of those wet dreams I had as a bass player. It's like, yeah.
And here's something that any musician should know. If you're looking for that magic tone that, you know, your god of choice of the week,
you might as well pick the fruit of knowledge from the golden tree.
But also remember that you can have the exact same gear. You can have the exact same settings.
Oh, yeah.
But how you play and the way your fingers are shaped will affect your tone. Classic story is guitar player for the band Extreme, Nuno Bettencourt. Amazing guitar player.
Huh.
Idolized Eddie Van Halen. They were, I think they were touring at the time, and Eddie let Nuno play his rig. Could not get the sound.
He wasn't drunk enough.
His fingers. His fingers are different than Eddie's.
Hi. And that is a thing, too.
It's really weird, but it's, you will never get, you will get close, but you'll never get the exact.
For a guitar player, I mean, in the.
Now, a drummer, all you got to hit is the right.
Yeah, no, no, right. Fuck him. No.
Singer, all you got to do, apparently, is suck off your.
How you doing on YYZ?
Hey, if it works, flaunt it.
Right? And you do, sir.
Oh, you do.
And that's my big thing about guitar, in the respects that, you know, the people I look up to as far as guitar players are concerned, I mean, of course, as my band is very well aware, that, you know, Dimebag is kind of my go-to guy.
What?
He's wearing a Pantera shirt right now.
And Dimebag underpants.
I am.
At least he's wearing underpants.
Today. but it's one of those things where, you know, growing up, I listened to Kirk Hammett and how he's played and his style. And honestly, the songs that I come up with for guitar, as far as my end of things, always have had a very Metallica rhythm to them, because that was the first shit I was learning. And it's very crunchy, it's very simplistic in its nature, but it has a punch to it. When it comes to solos, or it comes to how to put together a song, I look to Pantera, because Dime was amazing, in my opinion. I mean, it comes to a point where I idolized Eddie Van Halen before I knew who Pantera was.
Dime was a fucking wizard, man.
Let's put it this way. Eddie Van Halen put his guitar from their very first album, his prized piece Bastard, in Dimebag's casket, because he had that much respect for him. And it's one of those notions where it's like, when your heroes idolize other people, you gotta take notice.
When your hero idolizes you.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly, and that's the thing. He loved Ace Frehley and Eddie Van Halen like brothers and thought they were the baddest motherfuckers on the planet, and both of them thought he was phenomenal.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where you have to step back and you have to go, that's fucking incredible. Mm. And the way he was able to construct these songs out of just pure, unbridled fucking talent, that's something I look up to. Knowing full well that even if I study for the next fucking 50 years, I probably will never be up to that. And I know that, and I'm okay with that. However, it doesn't stop me from pushing myself to be better.
Yeah. And you do kind of drive the rest of us to be better.
But none of you motherfuckers practice. Well, maybe you.
No. Thanks for that.
I go home and I'm like, I got to work on this riff. Everyone else is like, fuck it.
I'll wait until I practice. Friday. I sing along in my car.
And yeah, to other people's songs.
Own it. Kind of hard to sing and our songs when there's no music room.
And hey, I go to karaoke too, so eat it.
To other people's songs.
He's using his instrument.
That's fair. No, that's fair.
I'm the one that really just never fucking.
Well, in all fairness, neither does Sean,
talking,
but he doesn't
Pantera
have
and
that
dance
much.
Influences. Steve, where do you get your who influenced you?
Oh, hell. Actually, I have a lot of the same.
Hell, that's a good place to start.
Yeah, the devil is one you? Hell of a fiddler.
Honestly, I have a lot of the same influences as Danny, man. Pantera, Motorhead, Metallica, Soundgarden. Wow. I can't even hit Chris Cornell's highs.
Not yet. You will.
Maybe one day. But... and rest in peace, by the way.
Hoorah.
Chris Cornell, man. Yeah, I mean,
you know, when they found
Sabbath.
Him, he was just hanging out.
Oh,
too soon, bro. Too soon.
Oh, but yeah, I mean, also Sabbath, man.
I can hear a lot of Sabbath
yeah,
when you're singing.
I love,
and your writing, actually.
I love just Ozzy's groove in Sabbath with his lyric writing and also his deliveries. Metallica was definitely a big influence on me growing up. But I mean, hell, man.
I think that's
any
fair.
Kid that grew up in the 80s
or
90s, didn't
that
Metallica
matter.
Influence that was, you know, at least into metal or somewhat into
right.
metal. You know.
And honestly, I mean, our mutual love and respect for Pantera was actually what got me to say what's up to him. You know, he was hanging out at work and he had this vest on that said R.I.P. Dimebag. And I was really fucking heavy into listening to just Pantera at the time, and I walked over, I was like, dude, fucking brownie points on the patch. And he had Black Label Society on his back, it's like, Zach Wilde, fuck yeah, dude. And so we just started talking, and, you know, we eventually started talking music, and I started talking about how I play guitar.
And he hasn't gotten rid of you since.
Right?
Right?
And how I told him I wish that I could play Dime Series ML, because I just love the body style, I love the way they play, and he was like, I got one. I was like, can I play it, please? And that's, you know, that was kind of where we started, was
right.
just talking Pantera and our yeah. mutual respect and love for Dimebag. I mean, it was just...
Yeah.
Dan, what about you? Where are your influences at?
Cool. I came from a slightly different angle.
A rhombus, actually.
Cool.
But... Guns N' Roses was the first. When I
absolutely.
Heard Slash, I was just like, holy fucking shit, who is this guy? And I got that. My sister handed me Appetite for Destruction on a tape when I was 13.
And
she handed me that and NWA Straight Outta Compton.
Fuck yeah.
There's a 1-2 punch for you
right
there.
Right?
And I wore the fuck out of both of those. That was a bombshell to my 13-year-old sheltered altar boy brain.
Right?
And yeah, I was...
2 years later, he hit the age of reason.
Coming straight out of church.
Right? And, yeah.
Danny for the win.
I was immediately hooked, and then, so I was big on Guns N' Roses well into the mid-90s. They were my go-to band. And then finally Use Your Illusion came out, the 1 and 2. And that was around the time the alternative scene was getting huge.
Yeah.
And I was constantly going to local shows at La Luna in Portland.
God, I remember
Kevin
the La Luna.
The X-Ray Cafe.
Right?
They were all-age venues, and they were the few all-age venues in Portland that that had awesome bands play.
All right.
You know, and that's where I started really getting influenced by the Seattle and Portland alternative sound of, you know, like Soundgarden, Alice in Chains,
Alice in Chains. Yeah.
Alice in Chains will always sit pretty.
Pearl Jam. I know a lot of that's pretty cliche, but that was just huge in the scene.
It's the time we grew up in.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It was relevant at the time because it was amazing.
I was 18, and that was just blowing up around me. You could not miss it.
There's a reason it was popular.
And so that heavily influenced me, and then fucking I got tuned into White Zombie.
And right.
Fucking early 90s, Les Exorcisto, and between Guns N' Roses and White Zombie, that's when I picked up a guitar. I was like, okay, I want to learn to play some of this shit. And that's when I started playing, but a lot, and then eventually Pantera got pretty heavy into them. Metallica, I didn't get into until like my mid-20s. It was fucking weird.
Huh.
I mostly missed out on it in a lot of ways, and that was
and
probably,
now he shall be shunned.
You know, right?
Shunned.
A lot of that
shunned,
was, you know,
shunned.
Having a very Christian upbringing, and, you know,
right.
You know, I'd occasionally see, like, the Metallica logo on a chalkboard and, like, wonder what the fuck that was. You know? And the same with, like, the Grateful Dead, Deadhead. Mm-hmm. I'd see the skull, like, somebody, like, put it on their notebook. Whole time, the mic's been off.
Oh, you've been registering.
That's why he's been so quiet.
But yeah.
but you know.
And I had no idea what that shit was. And then years later, I was like, oh, I missed out on all this shit. So a lot of that influenced me like after the fact later. But really, if I had to go with just the big influences, Guns N' Roses, White Zombie, then Ministry, Marilyn Manson, and then Tool.
And from being, you know...
Nine Inch Nails fucking rocked my world for a good 3-4 years.
I'll be honest with you. Having been, you know, buddies with Dan for the last 4 years or so, Tool definitely strikes a hard chord for him because, honestly, it's about the only bass play style I could somewhat equate because the way that the bass player for Tool plays, again, doesn't necessarily follow rhythm so much as it has its own rhythm and makes
it
the song.
Timings,
yeah.
Right? It's not 4-4.
And that's one of the reasons why it works, but that's the closest thing I could equate your playstyle to. It would be very Tool-esque.
I totally would agree with that, yeah. And it really works in the context
of... I take
that
as a huge compliment.
And you should.
I do try to kind of go for that when it comes to bass of creating another layer in the song.
It's a wall of sound.
Another layer of not only tone but rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the things I love about Tool is the layers of complexity in any given song.
Yeah, but fuck them. They have knowledge
and
talent.
Even with their
they're smart and stuff.
Fuck those guys.
But even with their simplistic,
Sober
songs. Yeah. Fucking what? 3 chords total in the motherfucker?
About 5 or 6, but still, it's like, god damn, it sounds a lot simpler than it is. Especially on drums. Fuck that guy.
Yeah, Katy Perry, I mean, he definitely kind of makes that.
He's on a world of his own.
But you listen to even their simplistic stuff, and there's just multiple layers and the differences in timing. And I figure if I'm going to be playing another instrument, one of the worst things you can do with a bass, in my mind, is to just sit there in the
background.
Follow
the rhythm.
Like, the classic 80s bassist drives me fucking nuts. But if you listen to Guns... Listen to Appetite for Destruction.
Oh, yeah.
Listen to Duff McKagan.
Oh, yeah.
That motherfucker isn't just playing fucking to the rhythm guitar. He's just not backing up his instrument. He's fucking walking up and down that neck and getting hooks in. But they're all just mixed in perfectly.
Yeah.
And I really admire that type of playing, and that's kind of what I'm trying to strive for. So.
And it shows in that respect. And honestly, the only place where I would ever take off from that, again, having played bass for a long time, I love that style too because, again, my bass. I'll keep bringing them up. I'll keep blowing them while I'm on here because fuck it, why not? But
this whole podcast is just Dan blowing
up. I know, right?
Well, and that's the thing.
He's either blowing Steve, he's blowing Dan, or he's blowing Mudvayne. No one here.
Yeah.
No.
Fuck you, James. but you know the thing about it is I will say that although I love that branch style of play, especially on bass, there are those moments where the rhythm and the bass and the drums all come together and they get that fucking push. And we find that so often, especially in like our breakdowns and things like that, where it's just that fucking hard push that comes from all different sections, but it comes together in one common goal. And then once the song spans back out, everyone's back where they are and it meshes beautifully.
And you'll hear that when you listen to Lucky Sevens.
No, you won't. He's not going to play it. Nobody wants to hear it.
Well, I mean, dude,
it shall be played.
Just from a lyrics delivery standpoint, man, there's some deliveries from my lyrics, dude, where I look to Dan's groove.
Oh yeah.
That he sets with his bass, man. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that cues me off to like how I want to deliver a word or a set of words that kind of jive with that groove.
I think Good Day is a good example of that.
Yes, oh, yeah. I think so too.
Kind of the bass and the lyrics walk with each other. This
yeah. And that's another reason why I'm excited to, you know, someday get Smuggling Blues figured out.
Yeah.
Because that's a sign that, that's a song that Daniel totally can shine,
that's
you know,
the
totally
song
shines
that
on.
Never
because
it will, you know, but it's that's the hard part about
that
song.
He's got a lot to figure out on it.
Well, and that's the thing. We never actually take specific time to really figure that song out for what we all want
and
it to be.
Solidify it.
Because at this rate, every single time we play it, it's always about 60% different than the last time we played it.
And
which is too much difference, in my opinion. It's like, again, I'm a repetition guy. And although I'm cool with that, that song is too repetitious.
Works 60% all the time.
it stretches
too long in certain parts, but then
it's too short.
Seriously,
and
you
know,
smell
like a diaper fire.
It's a clusterfuck in and of itself.
That one song has really, I would say, been our one.
It's the bane of our existence.
It's been the one pain point when we tried to get a song to come together. That is the one motherfucker that just refuses to.
And it's,
it just escapes it for some reason.
And it's sad because it's like maybe with the induction of bringing you on board, perhaps maybe you could
He's
give us that different
right
point of view. I am pointing at you. because at this rate, it's on you, motherfucker. You need to make this song work.
Remember, if James doesn't like it,
it
doesn't fly.
It's bullshit. and we ignore it anyway. But that's the thing. It's like that song, Dan gets to drive the shit out of that song, and I love that about it. The drums have a very steady, waltzy kind of beat to it, which is wonderful because it's got a blues vibe to it.
Once it gets going, and that's the thing.
Right.
It's getting it going is the balance between the kind of slow, bluesy,
as where most of our songs
has to then the breakaway.
Yeah, I have never heard this song, and I really want to hear this song.
It's, you've kind of heard it once.
You will.
But it just didn't happen.
It's a very Smokey and the Bandit-esque.
Yes.
Yes.
It has that
mentality
feel.
Of you're running a truck of dirty goods across state lines.
And you just got to make it to your destination before fucking Smokey gets
so
you.
So it starts out pretty mellow because, you know, the heat's not on.
Right.
And it drives up.
But and the hard part we've had, and we've hit it a couple times where it's like, that's fucking perfect. Why
right.
Why don't we record it?
We tried to record it, and then the machine would break.
dude. So what you're saying essentially is this song is the Luddite of songs.
It is.
It is
met with the most amount of disaster, save for Bodies on the Bayou, which is still a sore spot, I think, for all of us.
Oh, yeah.
Because
yeah,
we had a beautiful, perfect playthrough, and it was off the cuff, so none of us knew what the fuck we were doing.
And Reaper took a shit,
and it got recorded.
And it,
boom! Exactly. A while back, the computer had an issue. To avoid getting goddamn technical, it was a latency timing issue between the audio card and the motherboard. And hunting it down was a motherfucking nightmare, and I just was not at the time able to solve the problem. So, randomly, could happen after seconds, could happen after hours. it would just when we record, it would just seize and the whole system.
Sounded like a modem, man.
Kind of like a modem.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it sounded like Stephen Hawking coming.
And I think we just found the title of the episode. That was brilliant.
Well, and that was the thing. It's like with Smuggling Blues, we've had beautiful moments. But our big issues that we've had is it's like, just like Dan was saying, there are moments in the song that stretch too long. There are moments in the song that are too short. Or we try to fix certain moments and that ruins the mood or the feel. But at the same time, it makes more sense, but it doesn't because it sounds worse. It's a fucking nightmare.
It's been an ass fuck.
And it sucks because we have the gist of the song. Every single time we approach it, we have the gist. And it's like, I have never written a more simpler guitar riff in my life because it is three chords. And the start of it is the exact same as the chorus with a little bit of a flare later on. Oh, no, it's open three. Open three.
Okay. Well,
and then the chorus is
open three. We can argue that later.
It's
right?
The same thing. 3-5. 3-5?
So a total of four chords.
Three. Just played differently.
Jesus Christ.
But it's just one of those things where it's like that song will be the bane of our existence until we can officially have time to work it out. At this rate, the sad part is we do have somewhere in the ballpark like seven songs that are almost near concrete as good as we could make them prior to your, you know, introduction to them. So at that rate, we have these songs that need to just get in the can and done because Dan has... What, six songs that we've never brought up to the table?
Five I'd want to fuck with.
Okay, so five you'd want to fuck with. I have three or four riffs that have yet to meet a home because I have them. I love them. I played them for them, and they like it.
I've come in with two riffs that I would like to see.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. And Steve has, what, six
notebooks
full of lyrics that are unused?
Yeah, I got a lot.
So it's one of those things where we have massive amounts of potential, but the frustrating point about it is we end up practicing the same six songs, and then we try to record, and either something goes catastrophically wrong, or we end up dicking off on the porch. And it's like, so shit doesn't get done in a regular basis, but it's still okay because this is... Until we start making money doing this...
This is music therapy.
It is, and it's just for fun. And
well,
it's,
and Dan, you and I have talked about that this may never go anywhere, but
there's a really, really,
no,
really good
God
chance this will go nowhere, and that's okay.
It is okay.
No, it is okay, and like we've discussed, and I will mention here now, the goal, at least for me, and I think all of us actually here, is
to get all the bitches
and hoes.
Okay.
They are different.
Maybe not for everyone here. is to get these songs recorded so in 10, 20, 30 years down the road, we have something to show for this time that
absolutely.
We can say, I created this. I was part of this.
That's what excites me about it.
And we are now at that point since I've been on board. We've only done one song, but I've only been officially a member for 3 months.
Yeah, around that.
That's pretty decent. And we should have a second song done here. We've just had timing issues, and that's something just like this with this podcast. This only works when we can get together,
mm-hmm.
and
when life doesn't get the fuck in the way.
And that's exactly the point. Life always gets in the way.
Every day.
Well, you got one day, and then six other days of bullshit.
Yep.
And those six other days of bullshit
sometimes
encroach.
Yeah.
On. Mm-hmm. That one day.
And the worst part I've
and it's
come to
maddening.
Realize, it is maddening. And the worst part that I've come to realize is, you know, the whole production aspect of this group, a lot of the time, unfortunately, lands almost squarely on Sean's shoulders.
True.
And it's not really fair to him in that respect because I'm definitely not trying to say, well, it's all fucking Sean's fault we don't record.
Oh,
no, that's not the case at all.
I think
we have had way too many practices where Sean was here and we completely wasted all of our time.
Right.
Last time all five of us were together, as a matter of fact.
Right? And that's the thing.
Nothing got done.
Well, in all fairness, the rig was in
the
pieces on the bed.
Possible.
Yeah, yeah.
But
we thought Dan was dead for a long time. We couldn't wake him up.
True. But, you know, it sucks because I know that pressure even unknowingly falls on Sean, and he knows it. And I know he feels bad about it when he has to miss practices, but just like you said with the podcast, life happens, and it sucks. And I don't hold it against him. And it, because, again, we have wasted his time with us. But I will say, when we do get those golden opportunities where we're all on board, we get him recorded, we're happy with the length, and he gets his stuff in the can, that's when we are very productive. That's how we got Lucky Sevens done.
Yep, yep.
We had the production of Sean being able to come out, do his drums out, do it again, do it again, do it again. Okay, now they sound great. We can move on to the other pieces, which is awesome, but that's how it works. And so,
and we were very close with the current song we're recording the last time Sean was here. Actually, the time before, because last time we just all...
We fucked off.
Was a very long debate. Someone in this room was really upset.
I don't know who that person could be.
Not a clue. But I was actually afraid that it might come to blows.
Damn.
Fucking Danny.
Not me this time.
No, and I think moving forward, and we've all discussed it, I think moving forward, it's about cinching down and taking advantage of the opportunities when all of us are here.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and it's tough because this is just like this podcast. It's therapy. The five of us get together and we don't want to do anything except just unload.
Right, yeah.
And it's fun when we're just having fun. And the cool part about when we do kind of waste our time, you know, we have the rig open, we have everybody piping through, but we just decide that today is not a recording day. We just jam.
Yeah.
And that in and of itself is very therapeutic for me.
And I actually told Dan when I got here, my hope was, because I didn't know Sean wasn't going to make it, we weren't going to record tonight. We were just going to play.
Yeah.
Because we needed to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's still songs I need to learn that I have yet to even get one playthrough.
Yeah.
And
sorry.
No, it's fine. I jumped into this fully intent on recording, not really envisioning the larger scope. I was very focused on what I hoped to accomplish with this band, and we have
abandoned all hope, all ye who enter here.
And another thing that's hampered us too is weather. We're in a tiny, well, not tiny. This room is actually bigger than my apartment.
It is. However, with the bed and everything and the drums, it's kind of tight.
It gets warm. I feel.
And with five sweaty dudes, it's, you know, not very fun to get to jamming.
Well, four sweaty dudes and me.
I will say, it works out great for me because when I start sweating, my fingers start sliding, and, you know, I actually play better.
I like it when your fingers slide. You know, just saying.
I like it when I'm sweating.
Yeah, baby. You know it.
I feel, sweaty personally, balls. I feel that as
sweaty
the weather
ass brothers.
Colder cool outside, and we're spending less time outside, we will probably work
more. Oh, no. Weather has never stopped us from digging off on the porch.
Yeah,
it's been blistering fucking cold, and we're all standing out there shivering like,
I haven't
we
been
should
part
go
of
inside.
The band before then, and I don't like being cold. So there may be a lot of, let's stop fucking off.
Winter
up.
Is
let's,
coming.
Let's go, let's go get warmed up. But speaking of the future, what would you guys like to see, since we're all in almost all of us, in the room together, what would you like to see happen? What are...
Platinum records in a mansion?
Short-term achievable goals.
Platinum records
I've
in a
house? I've
heard
us play.
For me, man, it's getting the demo done.
How about a DVR or a CDR? Yeah.
You're a CDR.
Your face is a CDR.
Yeah, it's nice and shiny. No,
I will give you both an enthusiastic and you won't like it.
He's a CDR.
Hey, don't
he's
threaten
a CDR,
me with
he's
a guitar.
You clearly have never had an enthusiastic.
No, but it sounds great.
Right?
It
sounds like a ball.
Yeah.
Okay, here it
is. Oh, James!
Ooh, that's right. Say my name!
But no, really, I mean, really short-term goal, man. I'd like to get the current songs that we have on the docket for this demo in the can, done. Mm-hmm.
Move on.
Lay to rest, man.
And that's completely achievable.
Because if we get that demo done, we can start looking for shows. We can start putting it out there, and start trying to find, like, even if they're just opening gigs, man. Dude, we have a club kitty corner from this property.
Right?
I'll tell you what,
and
man.
Dan, you and I have talked about...
We could definitely get it.
I'll tell you what. Yeah. At this rate, I've always been at this point, you know, I've always wanted to have the demo done so when we played a show, we'd have something to peddle to the people who that actually too. Liked what we saw. But I'm at the point now where it's like, again, we have practiced most of these songs. Again, this was my thought prior to you coming in and needing to learn and get acclimated and changing the songs for your style. I was very much on the par with the idea of, fuck it, let's do a show, get it out of our system. If anybody likes us at all, that'll be great. They probably won't hear from us again for months, years probably, but that's okay. It's one of those things where I almost wanted to get it out of our system, but every time I thought about that, I was like, no. The best way for us to do this in a way that may lead to something of a following that would motivate us to do more is to have substance to hand out.
Yes. We have to have something to give to people.
Exactly.
And I feel, again, I'm still fresh in this. I've only been 3 months in.
Right.
I feel like this is a very achievable goal. And, Steve, you and I have talked a little bit about promoting and marketing. And in this day and age, we don't even need a fucking CD.
We need a T-shirt when it says, this is your cum rag.
There, yeah.
You know.
But
jerk in this.
There, we have at our disposal, and I will make sure to get the links.
Herc the jerk in this.
We have a YouTube page.
Herc the jerk.
We have Facebook. We can put songs on iTunes. Even if we don't sell them, we can put them on iTunes and say, hey, you like what we did at this show? You can get our tunes on iTunes.
Yeah.
And they're free. Or however we want to do it. But the goal, in order to do that, we have to have something. And
we'll
I
make
think,
them 69 cents for the sense of saying it's funny.
Right? Yeah.
69, sure. Baby.
I mean, I'm just,
it'll just cost you a 69.
Like,
wait, what are you doing? Why are you taking your clothes off?
No, 69 cents so we can have a period in the middle.
Yay! Shark Week.
I built two websites.
Someone might actually pay 6.9
today,
right?
Just today?
No, to date.
Oh,
I built two websites.
Today, I built two websites.
Well, I mean, if you want me to like go that far, we'll just go ahead and say I just did it today.
Yeah.
Well, nobody's listening, so you can lie your ass off. It's okay.
But no.
Fix it and edit.
Built one. And it was real simplistic, you know, HTML, CSS. And then the second one I did had a lot more to it. But we need to find it a permanent home.
Yeah.
But I'm really in no hurry to find it a permanent home until we get the demo done.
Right.
True.
You know, it's like.
And on top of that,
here's not our music.
And that's another reason why a lot of the times that I try to practice as hard as I can and I try to come up with material as much as I can, because when it comes to things like Facebook, if anybody is my friend on Facebook, they know that I post maybe once a year, and it's usually photos of something I'm doing at the time that are kind of unique, you know, a big trip or something like that. So I'm terrible with social media.
Again, with the naked pictures.
I'm terrible with social media. I don't know how to build a website. I don't understand the inner workings of the computer process of how to build the rig or what to do with it. These are things that I rely solely on Steve, Dan, and Sean for, because honestly, they're much more well-versed in these things, and I feel like the only thing I'm really contributing is music. And I'm okay with that, but at the same time, it's kind of like, so, Steve, be creative and get us out there. Dan, be creative and make sure the rig's working. Sean, be creative and make sure you're putting out more beats and stuff like that by Herc. James, make sure you're creative and produce us. And while I'm sitting here, I'm just going to figure out how to play solo. It kind of feels
and
sometimes
be good looking.
Well, I am the face. And that's not saying much, but, you know, I'm just saying.
What are we, the A-team?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Shit, that means
you're Mr. T.
I guess I'm Mad
Boy. I got it.
Yes, you are.
Oh, okay.
That means I'm the fucking Latino guy that came in season 5 and destroyed everything.
Yep. Way to go, James.
Band is cursed.
Fuck you, James.
Damn.
The Ted Levine of...
But just be separate. Just pretend you were Stringfellow Hawk from Airwolf.
There you go.
Again, though, that's
you
what
came in on a crossover.
Yeah,
that's what I feel I always bring, and it's a lot of the times I always feel bad because it's like we talk about.
I said Ted Levine,
there.
And that's completely wrong.
It is wrong, but that's okay. But I worry about stuff like that. It's like what I try to bring is my end of the production. And I try to do it the best I can because I know that everybody else in this band has already taken on one more job than I have. And it's because that's one skill I'm not that well versed at. So when it comes to things like that, I look to them to do that. But at the same time, I know that I need to step up my own game just for that sake of purpose. But that's when I come in for the extra set of ears for
use your rig. That's what I'm doing.
Well, dude, it's all about...
What about you, Dan? What would you like to see moving forward from this group of misfits?
Well, I definitely agree with just getting the demo in the can, getting the songs knocked out so that we can explore new tunes, new mm-hmm. material, and older material that's been waiting in the wings. I mean,
absolutely.
I haven't made a secret of the fact that I would like to explore some of the material I've developed years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And, retrofit it for the band because I mean it's a lot of it's pretty industrial.
Your 400 beats per minute
yeah,
is not acceptable for Sean.
I don't think Sean can play that.
Yeah. So, some of the tempo.
What happened to their drummer? Died.
Yeah. He had a stroke and an aneurysm.
He hit it once and then fell over dead.
Yeah. You ever seen Spinal Tap?
Right.
Green globular?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so yeah.
But he died on stage, so that was pretty epic.
It was
right.
I'd like to see some of that material reworked. And but beyond that, I'd also like, seeing as, you know, we've been together 5 years, and the new edition, like, our styles have kind of evolved, the things we, how we play, the timings we've done when we've started playing new stuff, just experimenting.
Mm-hmm.
The timings have definitely evolved. The complexity has definitely evolved. It's not nearly as, I don't want to, because yeah, all rock in some way is repetitious, but the 7-8 songs we have to put in the demo, they all tend to be varying degrees of 4-4. You know, here and there it changes up a bit. And there's nothing wrong with that. Because that's where we were when we put all that music together.
Oh, yeah.
Now I think we're all capable of a bit more. And so, I can't wait to explore new material and bring to the table the ideas that have been stewing for these last 3, 4, 5 years.
Oh, yeah.
And now that we finally, for the most part, have our hardware situation sorted. There's a couple key pieces I'd like to change up. I'd like to give us a better audio interface. Just so we can have cleaner recordings overall. And I want to do that because that gives better material for James to work with.
Yeah.
It's hard to make magic out of garbage. So.
But I've done it. So.
Well, he sifted through the rubble of the garbage we have given him, and he found a penny.
You say no one has an ego in this pen?
Fuck you, James.
It's just a little one. It's just a really little one. We have gone on so long. There's been so much, and I think we're gonna have to do this again.
Yes, I would like to.
We're just shy of an hour and a half.
Oh, so it's a typical
show. Two more minutes.
I think we will revisit this. Hopefully next time we do this, we can get Sean in. I'd love to get him to weigh in on this.
Oh, yeah.
And hopefully next time we'll have maybe two songs that we can play. We can open the show with a song and end this. But for now, we're going to leave you with Lucky Sevens from the band Herkimer. Guys,
Enjoy. Thank
you so much. Thank you for letting me join in on this bullshit. And thank you for joining my bullshit.
Love being here. Love having you, man.
I didn't have a choice.
Yeah, and you still don't. You shut up.
Yay!
You sit there and you look pretty.
Okay.
Look pretty!
I am.
Strike a pose, damn it.
Try harder.
Next time we'll be back, well, Dan and I will probably be back with hopefully Big Jim, Samantha, and maybe Bryce, and more Nerd Fight, hopefully.
Fuck yeah.
Thanks for listening to this bullshit. We'll see you next time. Bye.